Well, we didn't talk. That's pretty much, I don't know, basically, I think we focused on the business, not ourselves. I think, you know, the business is the problem, whereas actually we needed to look at ourselves to then, you know, get, you know, to be able to put the energy back into the business. If we haven't got any energy, then if we haven't got that drive that we had before, then why not? How can we get that back? And I think probably in my mind, I thought, well, if we can get the business back working, that will make it okay. You know, it's like the wrong way around, actually, on reflection. but I didn't know this 3 years ago. So we actually got some business mentors in, Andrew and Russ, who we worked with, and were great, and they came with an agile mindset. I think the idea was nice, but I think we went for business strategy, like analysts and support, which definitely we needed, and we've learned loads, and we've got loads from that. But even at that moment, those guys were asking us a more basic version of what we've done with you guys is, what do you want? And we will help you get there. And I think we weren't clear, and we weren't clear ourselves, and we weren't clear with each other. And I think that was where a real struggle came. We got it the wrong way around. We put the business first, and that wasn't the right thing.
Welcome to the Happy Entrepreneur Podcast. This is a podcast for people who look at business differently. It's for founders, freelancers, change makers, and freedom seekers who want to make money, do good, and be happy. We choose the path of the happy entrepreneur not to get rich, but to express ourselves and serve others in the most authentic way we can. Many of us couldn't find our role by working for others, and so we chose to work for ourselves. We took the more uncertain path, not because we wanted to, but because we needed to. We value learning, play, and friendship, and we have a need to make a meaningful impact in the world. By following the path of the happy entrepreneur, we learn as much about ourselves as we do about business. On this podcast, I have conversations with other happy entrepreneurs from different walks of life, industries, and countries. We talk about the journey and about what we learned about ourselves along the way. For us, entrepreneurship isn't just a way to make money, but a journey of self-discovery and growth. If you're on the same path and are looking for inspiration and connection, then this podcast is for you. Will and Joel are friends from university who went into business together. They put all their enthusiasm and energy into it, and it grew. They worked hard, and they got their rewards. However, at some point, it stopped working so well. It went from simple to complex. It went from being exciting and rewarding to just feeling like a job. The spark had gone, and they weren't sure why. They'd focused their attention on trying to make the business work well again, but had forgotten to also focus on their friendship. In this episode of the podcast, we hear about how improving the communication between founders is more important than trying to improve the business, particularly if before they were founders, they were friends. Will and Joel honestly share the story of their business and their relationship as co-founders. They value their friendship more than anything else, but in creating a false harmony, they were doing more harm than good. They've both been on a journey of learning not only about business, but also about themselves and each other. By discovering what each of them really wanted, they were able to decide where the business needed to go and how it needed to grow. This isn't just a story of business growth, but also founder growth. Will and Joel, because of their friendship, found the courage to be truly vulnerable with each other, and through that, become stronger together. They reignited their passion for the business by discovering what they needed personally, and then exploring how the business could meet those needs. Enjoy.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you are. This is the Friday Fireside, brought to you by the Happy Startup School. So for those of you who are new to this this show, for want of a better term, I think we can call it a show now, Lawrence, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Call it what we want.
I think it's easier to call it a show. It just gives it the right, gets the feel of the energy. It's a talk show. Or a radio show. So this is our intention with this is to talk to people who are on this journey, what we consider, of basically making a happy business, being a happy entrepreneur. And that's really, for us, about being very intentional about the work you do. So a lot of the time in the world of work, it's about strategies and tactics and making things happen and growing and scaling. And what we believe gets forgotten is the poor little human in the middle of it who started it and thinking, what have I got myself into? And maybe there's two of you and you're trying to work that out together. And that's going to be part of the story today. And Will and Joel, they joined us on a program that we started earlier this year, BC, before COVID. It was a 2020 vision program. It was really to help entrepreneurs who are feeling like they need to make more of an impact, but they don't want to burn out. Mm-hmm. So using sort of lots of the tools that we've used in our community about getting in touch with what's really important to you, but also using technology and startup ideas to launch ideas and become more effective and more impactful with less effort. So that's where we met these guys. But before we go into that, what I'd like to do is get them to introduce themselves and essentially what the business is at the moment and what their roles are. And then we'll go into a bit more about what it means to run a business as a pair of co-founders. So I will pass on to Will. Maybe you can start by telling us a bit more about what the company is.
Sure. My name is Will. The company, we've got two companies, but they're kind of very heavily linked. We do inventories, start and end of tenancy inventories for the London's property market. And then we also do cleaning, maintenance and decorating for the same clients as well. We've been going for about 10 years now. And Joel and I have been working together for the whole of that time. Before I started the business, I'd worked in property in London for a long time in a variety of different roles, some property management, some sales, some investment sales, various different things really. And so, you know, I kind of had this idea of starting the inventory company. And then after a couple of months, Joel came and joined me, as I'd known Joel for, I think we'd known each other even for about 15 years or 14 years by then already. So, you know, after that time, we had the conversation and Joel came on board.
Nice. And maybe Joel, you pick up the story there in terms of, those early days. And also a bit about your background and you know, what Will just mentioned, knowing each other for 15 years.
Yeah, I know. I still can't get rid of him. So I'm Joel. I'm the director. And I challenge Will on what he just said that we do, because I think we are really important in people moving into their new home. And that's the role we play. And we do a variety of services around that to make them have a happy start. And in terms of joining Will, so before I joined Will, I was working for Decathlon, the French sports retailer. I'd worked there for 8 years in a variety of roles. Learned a lot, actually. They give you a lot of responsibility and you learn very quickly. I've been working there in London for, as I say, 8 years. And Will and I were in the pub, I think, surprisingly. And I think I mentioned to him that I was thinking of moving or leaving or just wanting something new. And I think he'd been 6 months doing it on his own, running the business. And he just kind of said, well, I don't feel like I can do this on my own. I think I'd like some support and help. And if you're up for it, do you want to give it a go? So that was pretty much it. We did do a little bit more conversation around it, made sure that we were both going to be able to pay ourselves. But other than that, I think it was like, well, yeah, let's give it a go and let's see what we can do. So that's kind of, part of the journey, I suppose.
And what about when you first met each other? When did you get to know each other first?
I can tell you exactly when I first met Will.
Yeah.
I thought this might come up. So I found him outside the student union bar in our halls, and he was regularly known to be the first person. I think it opened at what time did it open, Will? You probably still remember.
8 o'clock. So Will was on the dot.
Will was there at least 7:45, first in the queue to get in. I knew of him from that, and then we did meet in that bar. I think I was more drunk that night. I think I'd had a bit to drink, and we bonded over rugby, and in particular Mike Catt, who was some kind of weird hero of ours. He was a maverick. We're not mavericks, but we thought that was good. So that's kind of
we thought we were then when we were young and
foolish. Yeah, we thought we were, but we've soon realised we're not. So that's where we met at Exeter University in the first year, and then from there we've been hanging out a lot.
Awesome.
I'll just add something to that as well. I think that this is an important thing, is that Joel really, really he saved me really there. It's true because when you move to university, I think most people who are listening to this who've been to university would have had the same experience. You're kind of plonked into a new environment where you don't know anybody, and you've got to try and find your people, find people that you're going to get on with for the next 3 years. And the people who were on my floor, who I came into contact with, they were lovely people, really nice, but they weren't quite my type of people. I think one of the things that their number one priority was their studies, which, you know, I had a couple of other priorities ahead of that. Then I met Joel, and so did he.
My dad's watching this, Will, by the way. So,
right, okay. Yeah. Sorry, Mike. We did also study very hard as well. But I think it was one of those funny things, you know, that phrase, fast friends, where, you know, you meet somebody and straight away you know that you really like this person. You're going to get on great. And so it was a real relief to me when Joel came up to me in the bar. And we just started talking about rugby. I think it was the first person I'd really spoken to about rugby in the time there. And it's a big passion for both of us and sport in general. And so suddenly it's like, right, there's somebody here who, you know, he likes a beer, he likes his sport, we can get on. And it was just such a relief, really, to feel like, right, I found somebody here who is going to make my time at university really enjoyable. So, you know, I think it was we both of us remember that the meeting really, really clearly, and we both have the same memories of it. So it's quite a nice thing.
Nice. This kind of need for companionship at that early stage of starting this kind of weird, strange new journey of leaving home and essentially at least the 2 years of like chilling out.
Yeah.
But this prospect of that in 3 years' time, I've got to know what my shit is, get something sorted because I'm gonna have to go to the wide, wide world. But it's interesting that finding your peoples in terms of people that I can actually get on with and I want to spend some time with. I'm gonna forward wind a bit now to this other journey that you started together, and I just wanted to hear more about what that was like at the beginning, because it felt, you know, it was not a formal kind of interview or business agreement, and unless I heard that wrong, and how it all started in terms of what were you doing? How did you get together and know who's doing what?
Well, Bill, do you want to kick off with what you did for the first 6 months or how you felt around that, and then I saved you again, essentially. So
yeah, this might be a theme. So I was working at Foxtons. For people who don't know who that is, it's, you know, a big estate agent in London. And so I'd come into contract with inventory companies. I was booking them every day, and I just didn't think they were very good. And I felt that they were missing a trick in terms of their service, that they wouldn't work weekends, they wouldn't work early mornings, and it was just inconvenient. So I really felt like there was something there that could be done about that, and it took me a bit of a while. I had two other jobs after that before I actually took the plunge and decided to open up a business and do it. And so I did, and because I've got some connections, I picked up a couple of clients, and it was going okay, but I wasn't really enjoying it, and I felt that I needed some help, I think. Particularly with the nuts and bolts of doing the inventories and speaking to clients and all those things. I was fine with that. It was more around the processes and making it into an actual business that I was really struggling with accounts and things like that, which isn't my forte. And so like Joel said, we were in the pub one night, and we were just discussing it, that, you know, he was asking how's the business going, and then he was saying he, you know, been at Decathlon a long time, and he was looking for a new role. And so I just said, well, why don't we think about working together? And then I think it was a couple of days later, Joel called me and said, you know, I've been thinking about it. Shall we have a chat? So then we met up and we had a proper chat about it, where we just discussed, because Joel didn't really know a lot about what the company was or what the industry was. And then he came and did a day or a couple of days of shadowing me to find out a bit more about what it was. And then we kind of got into, well, shall we do it? And we decided we would. And we went into it on the basis, and I think this is important for what comes later, that the friendship was the most important thing. And if after 6 months or even 12 months or 18 months, it wasn't working for either one of us, we had to say that to the other person. And then it was like, right, well, we cut our losses and we move away and the friendship's still there. So that was kind of my, those are my recollections of the kind of the very early days. And then Joel came in and sorted it all out again, I suppose, is probably the...
No, exactly. I think when Will asked me, when it goes to discuss, I think my initial reaction internally was no, because we were friends. I think, my dad had an experience when I remember I was a kid where he'd worked with a friend and it hadn't worked out. And, you know, when you remember something from your past that's quite kind of, you know, in you know, it's always there, it's integral, it's just a moment. And I think I kind of carried that a bit. And I think other people probably, they will always say, don't work with your friends or along that line, or don't risk your friendship for it. So I think my kind of, well, it wasn't a no, but it was my initial reaction wasn't to run towards this offer from Will and, you know, grab it. But after a couple of days, I think probably talking to Claire and discussing it, I thought, yeah, let's at least, you know, give it, you know, some thought and discussion, which is what we did. And actually, I think the agreement, Will, was, I think it was very, and I think I'd probably push for it, but it was like 12 months. And in 12 months' time, we can walk away with no discussion about why, without having to go into the why. So, you know, maybe that is naive. Maybe there would have had to have been a why, but it felt like, look, we'll do it for 12 months. And if either of us feel that there's a problem or an issue that's not working, we can walk away without having to explain ourselves so that we can try and maintain the friendship. And I think we flew past 12 months without even looking at it. Again, I think it, you know, yeah, if we were, we both, our needs were being met, right, which is what you're going to get onto kind of later about where we struggled. And we both, you know, were going with the flow, carefree, we're getting paid enough money, managing our own time, you know, all the things that come with working for yourself. And it was great. It was really good. And we just like, right, that's going to be the biggest and the best, make it very simple. And there was not much strategy, but there was a lot of energy and passion and determination. And that's what we both were enjoying. And I think that's where we kind of worked so well together, because it was just like, right, forwards is the way, and that's it.
Nice. Interesting, the forwards in a way, and I'd like to maybe dive into that a bit more, but I couldn't help but also, Laura's thinking about reflecting on how we started and how that landed for you, with hearing about their first decision to work together.
Yeah. I think back to, I'm actually, it's one of those things you try and rewind like 15 years. I can't remember anything that happened 15 days ago, but my memory is, I definitely think we were more on the cautious side in terms of trying. Well, not that you guys haven't been friends for long, but we've been friends for even longer, I think, since we were like in primary school. So I guess, like you guys, that's definitely a worry that we had. There was this thing of, you shouldn't go into business with friends or family, in this kind of voices in your head that it's a bad thing and you've got so much to lose. So I seem to remember we didn't really start a business together at the beginning. We just tried out some projects together. We worked on a few, we didn't call them audition projects, but looking back, that's what they were, I think, to get a feel of how does it work? How does the money work? Do we enjoy doing it? Is there something here? I don't even know if we thought of it as a potential business. It just felt right to start collaborating.
Yeah, that's my recollection of it all. There was that slowly approach. It's like, okay, yeah, I can do this bit, you can do that bit. We can make a bit of money here. Why don't we just do some work together? And it was only, I think, at least 2 years before we fully committed to each other.
Before we got the keys. To our happy new home.
Exactly. And then that took it to another level. And there's a bit more of also around the context of where we were and moving down to Brighton and actually landing our first client together rather than... I think the beginning was very much Lawrence on his own. He had some clients he needed some help. I would come along and help him with the stuff that he couldn't do. And then at one point we thought, okay, let's go and pitch a client together rather than it being just Lawrence finding someone and needing some help. And then I think that for me, and I remember very clearly the wedding planner website that we first did and landing that first client after a conversation on the seafront, going, wow, it's the first client.
It feels amazing, right? I think that's mm-hmm. the thing, is that the successes that you have, however little they are, sharing them with such a close friend mm-hmm. feels amazing. I think, and there's definitely, I've just hearing what you're saying there, that you're probably the same as us, that the reticence in doing it, there's a risk factor there, right? That you, like I think you said, Lawrence, there's so much to lose when, you know, really good friends don't come along that often. So you've got a lot to lose there. And so I think that's the reticence that people probably have about going into business with their friends, and rightly so. I mean, there are lots of stories of it not working out. But you know, that feeling that you get of being able to share those successes, some little, some big, is an amazing feeling. So it's interesting to hear you kind of saying very similar things to how I felt about the business as well.
I think it's the trust as well. Like, you don't have to work it, that you've got it, right? When you're working with someone new, or you're not sure, you know, you're building up trust over time, and you're feeling each other out. You know, when you've got someone you trust implicitly already, you can move forward much more quickly. I think that's really important. Like, I know that's happening over there without, you know, having to discuss it, or, you know, we just kind of got on with it. And I think, yeah, that trust element for me, where I just know that Will's doing his damnedest as well, then you know, it's really important.
I like that you touched on that, because I think maybe it's a time to kind of introduce this question from Liliana. And she asks, did you write down the agreement and sign it?
No.
What did it look like to try and protect your friendship while adding clarity?
No, we probably should have done, but we didn't. You know, I think we have always worked on that trust. I think that was it. We've worked on that trust, and that has come through over the last 10 years, that we can trust each other implicitly. But we didn't write anything down. We the only real agreement we had was the one that Joel said, which after 12 months we can walk away. But no, we didn't. Maybe we should have done.
Eventually we got like a very basic shareholders agreement, but that was just around, I mean, yeah, it's like almost one or two pages done by a friend who could do it for us. But yeah, again, probably a bit naive, but also just getting on with it, right? You just kind of like, there seem to be more important things to do to make the business work.
Yeah, there were probably lots of other very important things.
But it felt like, well, that you said that almost verbal agreement to basically put the friendship before anything else was at the heart of it, even if it wasn't on paper or in legal form.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't even think we had a. I seem to remember someone told us we needed to get share. Oh, when was we set up as a
partnership agreement first?
Partnership agreement, shareholder that's agreement.
Saying you're going to have a partnership agreement.
Basically, don't talk to a lawyer if you want to build a business with your friend, because they'll scare you with stories of when it went wrong.
Yeah. And
it's in their interest to paint the dark picture of what might happen.
And I think from my perspective, like even just that partnership agreement, it didn't mean anything.
No.
Other than it was something that we should be doing. And that's where I kind of, on one hand, it's prudent, you know, from a legal point of view. And, you know, we have to have a disclaimer here. Anything we say is not advice of any kind of description. But my personal opinion is that sometimes there are these forms that you fill without thinking about what they mean, because they're things that you should do. And actually, what would probably be more important is actually thinking about what you are trying to do, less about the legalese, but what is it, does this mean for you and the person you're working with, and come to that agreement and that sort of, what does it, a bit like what you've done in, you, I think both of you did intuitively in terms of, right, 12 months, this isn't working for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the agreement, you know, and no amount of paper is actually going to change that, because it's all about both of your sort of needs and opinions. Mm-hmm.
What I say we should have done that we didn't do is we should have defined our roles earlier. I think that's probably in terms of what we were responsible for in the business. That probably would have been helpful doing that a bit earlier than we did. So if anybody's listening and thinking about it, I think, you know, if you do have a co-founder that you're working with, I think being clear about who's responsible for what, because the natural reaction, certainly with me and Joel, and to be fair, it was successful, so I can't run it down too much, but the natural reaction is to everybody, to for all of you to do a bit of everything, You know, because you feel like you're helping, you know, your friends, and it feels like you're getting involved in everything, which is exciting. But having those roles defined, I think it would be useful. If I was going back and starting again, I probably would do that.
I think all of this is really hard, right? Because you're talking about starting a business. Phil and I were just two people out doing inventories every day. It's like, well, shareholders agreement for what? Like, there is no business to have a shareholders agreement about. It's just at the moment. And then, as Will said, yeah, we can define our roles. But at that very early stage, we're the ones going out doing the work, and kind of the other bits around it, you're just kind of, you know, trying to do it. So there isn't much to base it on. So I think probably reflecting after a year or two, and then maybe agreeing that when we get to a certain stage, then we do need to do these things, and then we need to look at these things, then we need to discuss it, you know, however that is, or every year we're going to talk about these things. That's a good way maybe of planning it, because early on you just don't know what, you know, you're doing it for the sake of it when there's nothing there to do it for.
There's two ways we can go with this, actually. I think firstly, because I know Lawrence, you got a book that talks explicitly to that. Do you want to share what that book is?
Oh, well, actually, the book I was going to mention was E-Myth, E-Myth Revisited, which is a classic business book, which I think we read just about when we set up our first office, which was linked to roles, I think, in terms of, you know, if you look at the org chart of your organization, even if it's just one of you, even two of you, just seeing what are the different departments and who's doing what. I found that really helpful to think about those roles, and also at what point do you want to let go of some of those roles, you know, i.e. you're not doing what you're good at. But I think the other book you might have been mentioning is Rocket Fuel. Is that the one? Yeah. So Rocket Fuel is a book written by some coaches, executive coaches in the US, who've worked a lot with startup and company founders, and looked at what makes up a good founding team. And they looked at the roles and the sort of skills and, I guess, the needs and the abilities of people. And often it's a 2-3 person team. And just looking at the different roles and basically where we naturally sit. And I found it really helpful to see, you know, they talk about visionaries, and they talk about, I can't remember the other one, what was it? Anyway, it's a kind of operations type person, but they just talk about this spectrum. And it's well worth a read, I think, if you've founded a company with someone, just to see where you naturally sit best. And to also hear the things that people say about you, good and bad, is quite powerful on paper.
I think we naturally fell into roles. Sorry, Carl, just naturally fell into roles, which was good to start with, and it kind of went into our strengths. But I couldn't think I would then, you know, people say, oh, how's it working with your friend? Oh, that's good, because we, you know, Will has this and we complement each other. But I think actually we actually just got into that routine and didn't really challenge each other or really talk about it, because we felt that we found our natural rhythm. And I think that might have been a problem as well, is actually, Joel's found his natural rhythm, but does he even enjoy doing what he's doing, you know, just because he's good at it? So I think maybe that eventually became a problem as well.
So the two roles of visionaries and integrators, and I wanted to mention that because it very much kind of parallels the initial story of someone having a vision to make something happen, and then someone coming in to integrate some processes and ways of doing it to make it more effective or efficient or less chaotic, maybe. At that point of the story, you talked about then moving forward. You know, there's this energy, there's this excitement, we're just going to move forward. What was that in terms of when you're saying moving forward, what did that mean?
That's a good question. I think for me, it was always just biggest and best. It was, you know, get more clients, get more revenue, get more profit. More employees, you know, it was always something that I looked at, without, I suppose, really thinking about what the purpose of all that was. It just felt good to be growing and getting a bigger and bigger and more successful business. And I think the business grew really well in the first 5 years, I'd say. We started off with I think two clients who were reasonably sized agents in London. Then we picked up Foxtons, who was obviously the biggest agent. And over the course of that kind of first 5 years, we grew really quickly without really having to do much sales. So I think, you know, a lot of the work that Joel did enabled us to grow without doing sales around the things about the capacity, making sure we've got enough people at the right times a year, the seasonality, interviewing processes, when we're bringing people in, training people, all that type of stuff meant that we were able to maximize the amount of business that we were getting from the from these big clients. We were able to take a bigger share of what they were farming out. I'll give a good example of this, actually, that when I started the business and when it was the first 6 months, if somebody rang me and said, can you do an inventory on the 31st of November? I'd just say, yeah, fine, no problem. Send me an email. And then I'd get home that night and suddenly I'd find I've got 9 inventories to do on the 31st of November, whatever it was. So I didn't have any system for controlling that. And so I'd just have to go and do 9 inventories somehow by hook or by crook, which you can only really do 4, maybe 5. So, you know, Joel came in and immediately kind of put in some processes to, I mean, it sounds so stupid that I was doing that, but he came in and put these processes in place that meant that we weren't doing things like that. We were managing our time better. We were managing our clients' expectations better. And it was all those things that kind of over those first 5 or 6 years, we really grew pretty quickly. It was exciting. I loved it.
Mm. How about you, Joel? What was that period of?
Yeah, I think for me, I enjoyed problem solving and putting these things in place, you know, and using things that I'd learned, and particularly in Decathlon, where I spent 8 years, but I'd learned a lot there. And I think that was the enjoyable thing for me. And because we were growing and expanding and things, you know, we were constantly having to adapt and change and you know, react rather than plan too much. If we're honest, you know, you're reacting to what's going on. So for me, that was you know, the exciting bit about going forward and moving forward, where there were these things to tackle and challenges that we were facing that we would find solutions for and procedures and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that was the exciting thing for me. Although, of course, you know, seeing the business grow and seeing the end result and the financial results was really exciting as well. And it validated you, right? You know, we're working hard, we're putting this in, we're trying that. Oh, the money's coming as well. Everything's good. Everything feels great. So those first years were, you know, really good. Like a roller coaster, but it doesn't come down. It just kind of keeps going up and up and up and up. So it's great.
Another significant factor as well is we didn't have kids then. Either, and as you know, everybody knows, life changes when you get kids. Your priorities change, your outlook on things change. You probably, perhaps when they're young and they're not sleeping very well, you don't have as much energy. So those first years before the kids came along, I think there was, you know, a ton of energy from both of us to, you know, really make this thing work. And yeah, and then, you know, obviously the kids come along and you change your perspectives a little bit.
Mm.
Did you guys start before you had kids or after kids?
We were definitely actually we started the business, gosh, because formally with 2008 we were the Spook Studio, the company, but we were working together since like 2004, 2006, I think we were really kicking into a partnership. So we were a good couple of years before kids came on the radar. But it's quite interesting, even when you mentioned that, my daughter was born the year we started the Happy Startup School. And right. I can remember my wife saying, what are you doing?
Blame Lawrence.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like you said, there is a bit of a shift. In terms of that story, that pre-kids, there was this, I kind of got the feeling of like you're riding the wave of success. It was like, we do this, it works. We do something else, it's even working more. And it's just like this growing, exciting, expansive space of like, wow, this is great. And what I heard is like there's lots of energy, lots of capacity to put more energy in, and it felt like you were getting lots of positive feedback by the stuff that you were doing, and that felt successful.
Yeah, it didn't feel easy. It felt like if you put in hard work, you got results. Which, as Will will know, if I like to be validated by the hard work I do, I see that, and I'm learning that that's not the way to validate myself. But so I think that was it. We were putting in really hard work, and it didn't feel easy, but you felt like, yes, this is, you know, we're doing really well.
Mm. you were getting a reward for the effort.
Mm. Yeah.
And so that's interesting. Was there a point then where the reward didn't seem worth the effort at some point? Or you felt like you were putting a bit too more energy than you'd want to? Was there a tipping point? Let's put it that way.
The real point of this conversation now, is that right? I think from my point of view, I think Will will have his views on this, but as we grew, we got bigger. You had to put procedures in place and things became much less agile and exciting and been quite heavy to change things. And Will and I obviously had to put levels of staff in below us as well. So we kind of moved away from the day-to-day running and the kind of energy of that, and even away from the clients to a certain extent. So I think that, I wouldn't say that's necessarily a tipping point, but on reflection, that was maybe the start of when it didn't feel so easy or so exciting for me. And you know, we were trying to do things or change things. It took a long time, or the impact wasn't so quick. And I think we started defending what we had, like looking after what we had in terms of business, rather than, you know, being exciting and moving forward in any way. We were just kind of right, trying to take stock. And I think that's maybe where we lost a bit of energy and a bit of connection, just when things became a bit tricky. And then, as with all businesses, you know, you go out on the S curve and you know, the results weren't so good. And once the results weren't so good, but also the connection wasn't so good because of the business being a bit heavier and a bit less agile, then, yeah, I think that was for me when, it started to become more of a challenge. And I had less energy for it, but I didn't pinpoint that at the time. I certainly didn't go, you know, I can see what's happening. I can see it's just a slow, like, actually looking back now, I feel like I had a bit less energy there and a bit less drive, because I think, yeah, it wasn't going so well. So, and things I was trying weren't working out. So suddenly, you know, there's a failure there, I suppose, right? There's a feeling of failure and I'm not doing a good job, etc. So maybe that's when it kind of started for me. I couldn't pinpoint when that was, probably 4 years ago, four or 5 years ago, probably, when it started like that. I don't know what Will's reflections are on that.
The same, really. It's definitely a gradual thing. I think that as the business grows, it becomes more process heavy, and it's kind of like that thing of like when the business is small, you press a button and then something happens, and you can predict that if you press that button, that thing's going to happen. But as it gets bigger, you press that button, then something else happens. And it's like suddenly you got to press five buttons and get them in the right order for the thing. Do you know what I mean? It gets more complicated to be able to run the business and for the actions you take to have the impacts that you want them to have. So that then becomes, for me, who I'm not a detail person. I like things to be as simple as they possibly can be. And the bigger a business gets, the more complicated it gets. So I think from my perspective, where it started to get less enjoyable for me I stopped being an entrepreneur and I started having a job. It felt like I was going in 5 days a week to my job. And my job was a lot of admin, a lot of checking things, you know, a lot of kind of operational stuff, which I don't really enjoy. And when I don't enjoy them, I don't do them properly, which I'm sure is a big frustration for Joel. And maybe other people in the company as well. So I think that was, like I said, over a course of a long time that happens. When we first met, Carlos, you gave a great metaphor of the monster in the corner or something like that. Can you remember it?
Eating the beast in the corner.
Yeah, that's it. So just tell us that again, because it's kind of relevant to how I think it started to feel.
This is a bit kind of like the crossroads for us, Lawrence, wasn't it? It's like there was a point where running an agency, which is people intensive, you know, you only, it's to scale the business means scaling the people. It meant our roles needed to change and the focus of our attention needed to change. And the way I would describe my experience of it, it goes from the focus being the work and the creativity to the focus being that beast in the corner that you always have to keep feeding because it needs more food in order to stay alive. And that beast are the rents that your staff have to pay, the office building that you're in, all the different costs that just to keep yourself above water. And to have that beast always on the corner every time you're like sat there trying to do creative work. it drained myself in terms of energy. And
what does the beast do when you feed it more?
Of course, it grows.
I thought it was that the more it grows, the more it poos, and the more you've got to shovel up the poo.
You remember my metaphors better than I do.
That's how I remembered it, and it struck a chord with me because that's kind of how it felt. The bigger it get, the harder it got, it just felt like it wasn't playing to my strengths, and just spending a lot of time, the majority of my time doing things that I wasn't really enjoying so much. And Joel's absolutely right that when the business is performing well, you suck that up. But when the business doesn't perform so well, and we had a period where we started not doing so well for a variety of reasons, and we grew too quickly. So we took on staff who weren't good enough, or even if they were good enough, perhaps we didn't train them well enough. But certainly the service that we're giving to our clients dropped, which, you know, there's a delayed lag on that, and it means over the course of time you start losing business. Then there were some, you know, macro factors as well, that, you know, the Brexit vote didn't help things. And so there were certain things where the business started coming down. And also, you remember I said in the first 5 years we didn't really have to do any sales. It got to a point where if we wanted to get any bigger, we did have to do sales. And we weren't being particularly successful in that. So we were struggling to bring on new clients and onboard them and make them into the kind of the size of clients that we'd had before. And then we also did this thing where we started up a decorating department, which, you know, we ran that for 3 years and it didn't do well at all. Probably cost us quite a bit of money if we look back on it. And I personally took that as a real failure. I felt it really weighed heavy on me personally. It was the first time we'd done anything that hadn't succeeded. So I found that quite difficult to deal with emotionally. So I think there was quite a lot of factors about it that just started to make the whole fit thing feel like more effort than it was worth.
So where I see the journey going now, it's getting to this point where it's harder to predict how to grow, or, you know, you don't know which button to push anymore. There's no simple push this button and it will work. And then what that meant in terms of how it felt before, there was this real clear validation that you push that button, you get a buzz, you push it again, you get another buzz. And then at some point you start pushing the button and that buzz didn't get back anymore. And it became a much more complicated, or I would say even a complex situation, because it was hard to predict. And like Joel was saying at the beginning, it's like, we work hard, we get rewarded. It then got to a point where we're working hard and we're not getting rewarded anymore, or not as much as I'd like. And then trying to work out what's the solution, how do we do this, you know, start a little new business or push harder here, or try a bit more agile, be a bit more agile, and not being clear about what is going to be successful. That's kind of a complex situation, because you can't necessarily know what's going to work. And in times like that, when it's hard to know and it's quite scary and it's uncertain, and like I'm hearing, is like, then you start blaming yourself for some of the things that don't work. It feels like the most important thing is to stay at least connected and clear about what each other is going through, so that you can at least communicate about what could be the next steps. And so maybe is the talking a bit more about what, how that was affecting your relationship as friends and co-founders.
Well, we didn't talk. That's pretty much, I don't know, basically, I think we focused on the business, not ourselves. I think, you know, the business is the problem, whereas actually we needed to look at ourselves to then, you know, get, you know, to be able to put the energy back into the business. If we haven't got any energy, then if we haven't got that drive that we had before, then why not? How can we get that back? And I think probably in my mind, I thought, well, if we can get the business back working, that will make it okay. You know, it's like the wrong way around, actually, on reflection. but I didn't know this 3 years ago. So I think, we weren't communicating. I think Will can talk more about this, maybe false harmony. not. And again, let's be clear. Just, you know, actually, three or four years ago, we had our best year financially. So the business wasn't in dire straits or anything. We were still working well. We were still turning up, but we're probably bringing 80% of our energy, not 100%, and that was the difference. We're still going well, and we still made some progress. I don't want to make it sound like a doomsday situation here, where we were on the edge or anything, but we actually got some business mentors in, Andrew and Russ, who we worked with, and were great, and they came with an agile mindset. I remember specifically, when I was thinking about what we were going to talk about today, that on the very first day, it was about making that orbit diagram, and one of the things was, what do you want individually? And I put down to kind of, you know, 5 years' time to step slightly away from the business. I knew that much. I didn't quite know why. I hadn't dove into why. Maybe working 2 days a week. And then, right, well, if that's part of the orbit diagram, then what are the things that need to happen? And they were helping us with that. But I think at that point, Will said similar to me in terms of that. That was what he wanted. But I think that was the first real thing where there was real false harmony there, because I don't actually think Will wanted that. I think the idea was nice, but I don't think that, and Will can correct me if I'm wrong in a moment. But I think we went for business strategy, like analysts and support, which definitely we needed, and we've learned loads, and we've got loads from that. But even at that moment, those guys were asking us a more basic version of what we've done with you guys is, what do you want? And we will help you get there. And I think we weren't clear, and we weren't clear ourselves, and we weren't clear with each other. And I think that was where a real struggle came. We got it the wrong way around. We put the business first, and that wasn't the right thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're absolutely right there. I think the first thing you said there is so true, is that we were talking to each other all day, every day. We sat next to each other at work, or opposite each other, and we'd talk all day. We'd have long meetings about, you know, whatever issues we'd got, whether the finance team or, you know, the operations team, or we've had this complaint, or what we're going to do about it. And so operationally, we were talking about stuff all day, every day. So the communication on that side of things, we were still working really hard together, and we were still quite tight as a team to try and solve the problems that were coming up on a daily basis. We were still collaborating there, trusting each other and working well to try and get through that. But this thing of false harmony, which is, I think, the biggest point to come out of this, is that your false harmony is where you think a situation is harmonious because you're not shouting at each other. So you think, if you can avoid shouting at each other and saying, you always do this, you always do that, why haven't you done that? You think, right, we're harmonious. Mm-hmm. But it's a false harmony, because you're not actually expressing to the other person any concerns that you've got that might be valid. You know, it's not about moaning. It's not about, but it's about communicating in a clear way, which allows you to both understand where you're going towards that common goal, which we, you know, I think, well, I said this in a meeting here before, that Joel and I are both cooperative people, I think. We both enjoy collaborating with others, and we're quite empathetic towards what other people want. And so I think we kind of got into this situation where for 10 years we were building this business, trying to be mindful of what the other person wanted and build a business that worked for both of us. And what we ended up with was a business that worked for neither of us. And I think that's the key point to all of this, is that through that false harmony, or through that thing that you think you're doing the right thing. You know, and it's because you tell yourself this narrative of this is what Joel wants, and you haven't even asked him. You know, so you think, well, this is what Joel wants, so we're going to do this. And then, you know, you end up with something. It's like, well, it's, you know, it doesn't work. It's not what I want. It's not what Joel's want. It's a weird thing in the middle that doesn't suit either of us. So I think that's kind of where we got to, because Joel rightly said we just never spoke about that. I think we both felt it for a while. I reckon at least a couple of years, maybe even more. Joel, when did we start with Russ and Andrew, when we did that orbit diagram? That's got to be 3 years ago, is it?
Okay, yeah, maybe two and a half, something like that.
Definitely. So it was there then, for sure. So it might have been there before that. Of this feeling that we should have had a conversation, a cards on the table a conversation. We should have had that, and we would have been able to move on, but we didn't. So, you know, your question about the communication is the answer is, like Joel said, we just didn't, not properly anyway.
Just on that, I think that if we'd had that conversation then, we would have done it wrong. Because I think it would have been about what each other weren't doing or were doing. Yeah. Was actually, you know, what we needed to talk about is how we were feeling. And that was actually the thing that eventually we did get to 3 years later, talking about feelings. But I think the reason we didn't have them was because we wouldn't, you know, it was too challenging a situation. And also, we hadn't even started to look deeper as into what is this really meaning here. Rather, at that point for me, it's probably like, well, Will's not done that, or he's not putting enough energy in here, or I'm picking up that. And Will, you know, that probably would have been what it would have been about, an operational, structural business conversation still, which might, you know, again, it would have been the wrong way to go about it. But maybe we would have got through that, you know, eventually.
There's a story around business where it's this kind of complex machine that you just need to build in the right way and fix bits in the right way and it'll work. And I think from my perspective, it's just missing out. And this is something I've learned from the people that we've met along the journey of the Happy Startup School. Who else? The people in there and the human aspect of this. And yeah, we will get Joel to cry in a bit, Eleanor. She just posted a message waiting for tears. So the first thing is, like, while both of you are highly competent and probably change, you know, make things work, there was something that was stopping you. And you talked about communication. And you mentioned that you could have had these conversations earlier, but maybe had them in the wrong way. Is that what was stopping it? And it feels like there was a fear of something there.
Yeah, definitely. From my perspective, there's a definite fear of losing Joel as a friend if I have that conversation, definitely. You know, because I thought the only way to be able to have the conversation, like Joel has just said, would be, you keep doing this. And, you know, why are you doing that? Were you doing this all the time? Like in an accusatory or judgmental way? That was the only way. That's how I've lived my whole life. You know, I either keep things in, or when they do eventually come out, it's in this accusatory or judgmental kind of way. Funnily enough, it hasn't been very successful. But fortunately, Joel was able to eventually tackle that conversation in such a way that it wasn't like that at all. So we were able to, I'll ask Joel to talk through what he did in a minute, but we were able to kind of navigate through the hardest bit and then start looking about how we can move forward. So Joel, you want to just take that up on kind of what, how you introduced it?
Yeah, I think that, again, I don't quite know how I got there. I mean, there are a few other things, smaller things in between, but something had happened. I can't remember what it was. Came home, a bit pissed off, and I said to Claire, my wife, I need to speak to Will about this tomorrow. And we talked it through, and it was blatantly obvious that wasn't the issue. The thing that had happened was not the issue. I was feeling so, I didn't necessarily know what the issue was at that point. I didn't know this false harmony, the story we've got now is very nice on reflection, etc. But I definitely didn't have all of that piece together in my head. But I just knew that I was feeling certain things. And at that point, I think when we were hitting challenges, my reaction over the last probably 2 years has been to walk towards every problem in the business and try and sort it out myself and give more of me, more of my time, more of my energy to resolve it. And Will can tell you, you know, how that impacted him in the moment and things like that. And we weren't talking about why. So as I was doing that, taking a more, trying to help what I perceived as Will's area of the business, the more sales side, and try and do things in that area, I was getting more frustrated. And also, again, reflecting on, you know, the business wasn't doing great at the time and feeling it my fault because I was taking on more and not being successful again. And I felt, yeah, kind of alone and unsupported, I think. And I don't know, I can't remember how I got to that with Claire that night, but then I said to Will, I messaged Will and said, can we just have a catch-up? I lied about something else, didn't I? I said the budget or something like that. I said, can we meet in the car? Because he was out and said, meet and have a coffee. And I think I just started the conversation about how I felt. I didn't even talk about why. I just said, I feel really lonely. I think I probably cried, Eleanor, so you'd be happy about me. I definitely cried.
You weren't sleeping. Is it you? I think you just laid the cards on the table, didn't you? I'm not sleeping. I feel really lonely. I need some help. Yeah, and it was very powerful, because as soon as he said it, I knew exactly what he meant. If I actually know what I said, actually, when he said it to me, I said to him, "You need more help from me."
Yeah, you finished.
That was the first thing I said, because I knew what he meant, and he was right. He hadn't said, "You're not doing this." He just said, I'm not sleeping. I feel really stressed. And I was like, "Well, you need more help from me." And then we got into the conversation about it. And this is where we kind of talk about the false narratives, is that I'd been telling myself that Joel enjoyed that he wanted the control, for want of a better word. He wanted to be getting involved in the different areas and having his impact on it, and that's what he wanted his role in the business to be. And it made me feel like my role was shrinking and getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and I was having less and less impact. So I told myself this story that's what he wanted, and obviously it was bullshit. It was so damaging that I told myself this story for so long. And Joel's story that he was telling himself was that I didn't care anymore, which again, it's like when you start to actually unpick it and you talk about it and you understand the reality, neither of those things, what I was telling myself about Joel and what Joel was telling himself about me, neither of those things could be further from the truth. It's just a tale of poor communication, that if we'd had this conversation that is difficult, but Joel did find this way of doing it, if we'd had that conversation 3 years earlier, you know, it would have been great, but we didn't. So we had this conversation, you know, I think it certainly felt like a weight off my shoulders immediately. I think it did with Joel. We were able to be just really honest with each other, but in a non-judgmental and not accusatory way. That was the key to it, I think, isn't it? This is why I'm so thankful to Joel for doing it and coming up with this way and being able to have that emotional intelligence to tackle it in this way. Because if he'd come to me and said, "Look, you're not doing this, it's not on, I would have immediately thought, "Well, what about you're not doing this? Why do you?" And it would have been an argument, it would have been a confrontation, it would have made things worse. So I think just being able to have that conversation in that way just made all the difference. And then from there, we were able to start talking about, okay, well, if it's not working for you, how do we make it work for you? And we were able to kind of move on from there.
Nice. So quite a quick question before we go to the next step is, there's an instinct for you, Joel, to do that, rather than wade in and start accusing Will of not pulling his weight. You actually felt, no, I'm going to have to do it this way. I'm going to have to say where I'm coming from. Was that just something in you, the way you are, or was it something that, I don't know, had you read something? Had you, you know, what was it that allowed you to be that vulnerable?
I think that because Will and I both known that there was something not quite right for a while, I think, I've been doing not a lot of research or learning, but I've certainly been, well, as an individual trying to grow personally and look around, you know, learn around, you know, listening to Brené Brown, right? All the basic things that people do, you know, when you're just starting out, but kind of that kind of thing around vulnerability. And so I was certainly aware of it. It wasn't at the forefront of my mind. And I think talking it through with Claire, my wife, she's incredibly emotionally intelligent, much more than me, and feel guided by that. And having that conversation was with her, it was actually, she teased it out of me by talking to somebody else. Actually, that's what happened. I talked to somebody else about it and let it out slowly, and we discussed it and talked about feelings around it. And that's how it kind of came out. And had I not had that conversation, and I nearly didn't. I remember standing in the kitchen and I kind of, you know, one of those things is like, just go to bed now, bury this and not deal with it, or maybe I'll deal with it in a different way. I just spat it out. Oh, I need to speak to Will tomorrow about something. He did something that bothered me. And then it just came out. And once we talked it through, it was clear that the conversation was about us as individuals. I don't know. Because just. So I wouldn't, yeah. Claire, basically, I suppose. Yeah, there you go.
I'll also say there's a test, you know, going back to what we said at the beginning about this idea of going into business with friends and what's essentially what's the benefits, friends with benefits. this is a testament to your friendship. I think not only in the way that you approached it, Joel, but also the way Will reacted. Again, it was rather than, oh my God, you know, don't lay these problems on me, like, how can I help? And then it feels like the next step was to how to skillfully navigate. Now that there's this awareness, right, that's the problem. The solution is something, well, you needed to find a solution in a different way. And what I think I was just curious about, then how did you come across us? And what was it that drifted, you know, that you felt that this might be of help by joining something like a 2020 Vision Program, which is about making effortless impact and building digital products? And turned into, yeah, something that you thought you two could maybe join us on.
I don't think we'd had the conversation when we first signed up, have we, Will? I think it kind of came almost simultaneously, but I think the idea or the discussion around, I can't remember the exact timing. It wasn't a, we've got this problem, let's, this is a solution. I think we started talking about it a little bit before we actually got to the main bit. But, I mean, obviously I know you three, Claire, who worked with you guys, and I've got fed some of your marketing about this this thing. Is this your sales pitch now, by the way? You're really not shut up now.
Be closing.
And it was about clarity, actually. I think that's the thing. Your course was all about clarity. And I know we didn't fit the mold, but I just felt that it sounded interesting and that we weren't quite sure where we were or what the big issue was yet. And I actually sent it to Will and said, look at this, what do you think? And he immediately said, yeah, that looks great. I was like, okay. That, you know, again, something that didn't necessarily fit. But I think we were searching for answers and what you guys were doing and how you were approaching things. We definitely didn't know what the problem was, I think, when we started talking to you guys, but it just felt like we needed something, yeah, to expand and be pushed, maybe be challenged and pushed in a way where other people would help us do that. I think that, we needed help, we needed support in a different way. And yeah, I think that I was ready to be, completely... opened up and challenged to look deeper inside, which I think your course talked about, looking around the yourself first and then the business, building your business around that. And I think that's what attracted me to it was and I think when we started working with you guys on the course, it was that first bit of forget the business, forget everything. Now let's just look at you as individuals and then we'll come back to that later. And I think that's what drew me to it in the first place. I don't know about Will.
Yeah, well, I think the thing I'll pick up on there, which is absolutely right, is that conversation that we had in the cafe when Joel summoned me to the cafe, the conversation that we had there, essentially the conversation was just us agreeing that there was a problem. It wasn't us agreeing on what the problem was. It was just us agreeing there's an issue here. And then from that point forward, it was, right, well, we need to find out what the problem is. And then when we found out what it is, then we can try and solve it. So I think we were like, right, well, we need to start thinking about this in a bit more depth. And we need to start really thinking about what we want as individuals now, because, you know, again, this false harmony thing, we probably both had said we wanted things over the years that we didn't really. So it's about, right, let's get into what we actually want to get out of this. And I think when we looked at your course and some of the modules that were on there, it was particularly the stuff around the personal needs, which is, I've never done anything like that in my life before. I don't think Joel had either. And so we looked at that and it was like, this looks really, really helpful. Obviously you guys, you know, we had great recommendation from you guys, from Claire, who you guys obviously worked with before. So we're like, well, let's give it a go and see if this moves us forward. And it did. I've got my little happy startup notebook here, which you guys sent us through at the start. And, you know, it was an amazing thing, actually, to go through that, looking into what fires you up. You know, what makes you feel great about getting out of bed in the morning? What makes you really want to go out and attack the day? And what makes you want to just pull the covers over your head and go back to sleep? And I think most people never in their life even consider that. You know, hopefully, you know, we're moving into a world now where people do think about these things a bit more, but I could easily have gone through my whole life without ever considering that. So I think going into this course and looking at those things were amazing. It's absolutely eye-opening, finding out things about yourself that you didn't really know, and then being able to discuss it with your best friend in a way that you can both try and find out what's going to work for you. Just perfect, really.
I think hopefully this is for anyone listening to this. This is kind of going to the crux of this idea of going into business with someone. In the end, if you're going to, whatever tactics or strategies you need to execute, if there's no communication, if there's no trust, if there's no seeing the other person, the way I see it is, then you're not going to execute properly because you're going to be doing the wrong things for the wrong outcome. It feels like you've been both open, which is, I think, the other thing that I think is a testament to both of you, being open to trying something different, open to exploring something that a lot of people would run away from, and also making it your own. I think that seemed to be an interesting part of what I've seen in your journey. Like, we've got this process, this journey that we take people on, but you've taken those bits and applied it to your business and your relationship and the way you want to work. And I think what I'm trying to get to is, like, one of the exercises we have is writing a love letter to your customer. And so you had an interesting take on, or we had an interesting take on that, but you embraced it. And maybe you can share a bit more about that.
I think we've got Vix to thank for that, haven't we?
Yeah.
Vix's idea. Vix was in Will's group.
Will tell this story because it was Vix's idea. He seems to have...
I forgot my charger. I was about to run out, so I plugged in that. I told you I'm not one for details. What was the?
It was Vix who kind of proposed the pivot from writing a love letter to your customer.
Yeah, that was amazing. So as part of the course, for people listening who aren't aware, we have a weekly catch-up call where we talk through what we were working on and just get some ideas, both from my group was Carlos and also the other people on the group. And so Vix suggested, instead of doing this love letter to the clients, which we've subsequently done that exercise and it's amazing, but she said instead of doing it, why don't you and Joel write a love letter to each other? And it was, you know, a great idea, and we did it. And it was such a, reading the letter and writing the letter actually were such joyful times, just taking the opportunity to look back through the last 22 or 3 years, whatever it's been, think about all the fun times, you know, what you think is great about that other person. And just writing it down and sending it over was great. And then reading it as well, you know, all the things to find out what somebody, you know, really thinks about you and really likes about you is a lovely thing. So, you know, that I think from the minute that happened and we read those, things changed again, I think. The things just went up another level after that. I think you mentioned this yesterday when we were talking, Carlos. It's a really strange thing to think that when you've known somebody for 23, 24 years, that even after all of that time, you can find a way of communicating that takes you up a level. Mm. It's like, how is that possible that we communicate so badly that after 25 years of knowing somebody, you can find something else and another way of taking it up. So that was just a very, very powerful thing that we did. For me personally, I absolutely loved it. So I still, you know, read the letter every so often now. It was great.
I think the letter was, because we'd done the course, just to be to the course we did with you, we'd done individually, haven't we? And then we come back together. You'd agreed to help us do the course individually, come back together and discuss it. And I think we did that and we progressed individually. We then shared what we were doing with you guys and you helped us navigate. Then I think certainly Will felt at the start, well, okay, that's great. We've got our needs, but they don't match. So how on earth do you then come back to make it match for the business? And there were some challenges around that. And then you helped us get there. And then there was a, okay, well, there's still tricky bits to navigate here. It was, you know, a step forward, like a little step back and a step forward, a step forward. So it wasn't just a smooth, oh, that's it, we've done it, right? The feelings, we know each other's feelings or needs, that's great, off we go. And I think what it came back to when we were working with you guys was friendship had to remain at the center of anything that we were going to do, and that had to be protected. That was I think, Carlos, you said, right, that's, you know, that's what I'm hearing here is friendship comes first, and then from that, you know, we'll work the rest out around it. And it was, you know, we started talking about different ways of dealing with what we were going to do going forward. And actually, it was then when Vix mentioned that to Will, of like that letter was what centered the friendship. And then I think Will came back and said, I was talking about taking a step back from the business a bit more in terms of time. And, you know, immediately said, let's not talk about money. You can have the time no matter what. I'm like, well, no, of course we can, you know, it has to be fair that way as well. But again, it just changed our mindset around our discussions. And that's what we needed. That's what we wanted. We just couldn't work out how to do it. And that letter just centered the friendship bang in the middle. There it is. That's the thing that matters. And actually, if you go back to all of this journey, the whole thing we've been talking about, going to business with your friend, friendship was part of the issue because we did false harmony, but friendship was the only thing that resolved it as well. I don't know if you want to just sign off there, Carlos, that's a perfect ending. But that it really was, you know, actually having that friendship, centering that was the only way through this, for us anyway. And that was the thing that kind of, yeah, brought it all back full circle and has now given us huge energy and drive we're reinvigorated with the business and we're putting all of our learnings back into the business as well. And it feels, yeah, hugely exciting. I haven't felt this excited for a long time.
It was quite difficult, wasn't it, that process, Job, when we were going through that kind of 3 or 4 months period of trying to work out what we both wanted and how we could get that in a way that worked for both of us and retain the friendship. Mm-hmm. So it was difficult. And you know, we had to communicate well and openly, and the facilitation from you guys, Carlos and Lawrence, was unbelievably helpful. But I think because we had that thing of right, the number one priority is trying to find a solution and ensuring we stay friends and keep working at it. You know, there were days when you think, oh, we're just not going to do this. And then you'd come back to it and you try again. You're like, right, we're onto something here. You know, a few more weeks go past, right, you know, getting better. And it happened over the course of a long time. It was difficult. But because we had that trust that we've developed over the years, and because we had found this, you know, better way of communicating, we were able to get through that and come up with a solution that has energized both of us, gives us both what we need, both what we want, and just made us feel, you know, the both of us the best we felt about the business and probably life for years.
I think just one small point on that is because we were able to say things that were difficult in those when we're communicating. So I think at one point I said to you, Will, we have to acknowledge that maybe one of us leaves the business.
Yeah.
And being able to put that out there and saying that, being scared of that and saying we're scared of that, but maybe that is an option if it means that our needs are met for both parties, the ability to have that conversation without it bringing any tension in or any stress to the situation was really important to moving forward. So I think, again, it's just, yeah, you're right, the clarity of communication and the vulnerability and the ability to talk about that is really important.
That's awesome, guys. I think what that gives me is a lovely balance of possibility of what you can do when you kind of dig deep and put friends and family at the center of what you're doing. But also giving that pragmatic aspect to it is like, isn't this a silver bullet? It isn't like you just read a manual and suddenly you're kind of super connected with your co-founder. There's some work to be done and some honesty that's needed. Before we go, Lawrence, did you have any other thoughts or reflections from this, you know, lovely story that we're hearing from Joel?
No, just it's been a privilege, really. I think can't believe it's only 10 months since we met you guys and started working together. I think well, it's kind of brought back memories of our own journey, certainly transitioning to starting the Happy Startup School and the challenges of that, and like you said, trying to navigate kids and business and friendship, and yeah, knowing that you're not alone in that journey is nice. I found it really powerful to see these guys open up. You know, that's been really rewarding to see. It's just that relationship that's always been there, just like you said, taking it on another level, and that not to be at the cost of their own, at the cost of the business. Might just be worth finalizing or finishing with like what the business looks like for you both going forward in terms of, yeah, how you've got to this point and what that looks like individually and collectively, because we're still, you're not done yet, obviously. You're never done with this stuff.
No. You want to go first, Will?
No, you go first.
Sorry, Lawrence, just, what do you want to know?
Well, I guess it's like what the resolution was, because, you know, you've got to this point, yeah. You're excited, but like what that actually looks like for you both individually and maybe for the business as well.
Yeah, so I think when you go back to the working out your needs, that was inside and outside of work, which I think was important. Some of you, you know, what drives you when you're actually at work? What do you get energy from, etc.? Hell yes, hell no list, etc. Then also outside, what do you want for your family and for your life? And I think that it became, you know, for me, mine was all around, my large part of the drivers was around equality and having balance outside of work, particularly for Claire to have her opportunity to do her thing. So that's the reason I wanted to free up more time so that I could then be more involved with family and have family time, etc. as well. But I wanted that balance, whereas 50-50 in pretty much everything we do. And so that was my one of my big drivers. There are other things, but that was the main one. So moving forward, I've been able to reduce my time in the business as of last week to 2 days a week, but I'm still fully committed. In fact, probably more committed than I have been for the last 3 years. But that was what where it sits for me. And then in terms of responsibilities, actually it's redefined where we probably were 6 years ago, that I work much more internally with the team on staff fulfillment and those areas, something that I feel really passionately about. I'm not saying Will doesn't, but it fits where my needs and what I want to achieve and the type of business I want to have. And now we're working with you guys also kind of on the vision and the purpose again, and bringing these ideas and these thoughts and our own feelings about what we want the business to be back into it. So I think that's really opened up the next stage of the journey. But as you say, Lawrence, there's a lot still to be done. And this, for Will and I, we're calling it a 6-month trial and an experiment as well, just to see. So again, not trying to, you know, say this is how it is and this is what it has to be, to keep that communication open, to keep that ability to say, right, how's it for you? What's going? What's not so good? What's the, you know, how's it working? And I think that, again, one thing that you asked us to do, which we haven't finalized yet, was, didn't ask us to do, it was suggested, was that have a just a 4 bullet points or 5 bullet points of between me and Will and I, almost another agreement. This is what we do. This is what, and actually, when we're working with Andrew and Russ, our other some other mentors, you know, they use the phrase, you're formidable when you do this. So I'm calling it the formidable list. And that's the thing that, you know, when we check in with each other on feelings, when we, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that, having that there, almost like as a mini guide for Will and I, so that we never slip back to where we were before. It's very easy saying that it's there, but actually having it is really important for us moving forward. So, yeah, that's kind of how I see the future of the business and where we are at the moment and individually.
Will? You, Will?
Yeah, so, I mean, my motivations and my needs are more around the business. So for me personally to feel happy, I really need to feel like I'm progressing forward through my life. And a lot of that, I feel very attached. I attach a lot of that to the business. I mean, I might go and see a psychologist and they tell me that that's very unhealthy. But for the moment, that's how I feel, that I get a lot of my own self-validation through how the business performs. And feeling like, you know, I own and run a business that is successful, that does the right thing, that operates in a way that I'm very proud of. I've got a lot of energy to do that, and I don't feel like I want to step away. I'm more than happy to put a lot of my time into that. So, you know, for me, it's more about kind of pushing on with the company and really seeing where we can take it and just to make something incredible. And the other great thing that I think has come from this is that, that feeling that I am able to help Joel live the life he really wants to live. And I know Joel said it to me as well, that he is able to help and support me in the life I really want to live. And that's an amazing thing. To feel like we've come up with a solution where the business is getting the best of us, our families are getting the best of us, and that we are just hopefully going to be able to live this life that we really want to live. So like Joel said, there's a long way still to go on it, yeah. We still have to do a lot of work, and we have to make sure that it works. But you know, I think we feel, you know, a million times better. I can see Chris, one of, you know, our associate operations directors on the call, and he's just said that the change has been inspiring and the energy that's been brought to work has been infectious. And that's an amazing thing to hear. That's what we want, to have that impact on other people, and to create a business like that and to be able to have what we want in our private lives, is, it feels like it's the golden ticket. So, you know, we just have to keep working hard to make sure it is.
Chris is now getting a pay rise.
Chris nearly made me cry then. So that was no crying.
That was epic. That gave me goosebumps hearing that.
Cool. Now, I think this is, you know, why we love working with you, and we love working with you now, is that it just aligns with this idea. I think there's a phrase that I've been hearing recently: the business of business is business. I think where we're having here, the business of business is life. It's like, you guys are creating this business because you all want to have the best lives you can, and whatever that means to each other. So I'm super privileged.
Yeah.
Lawrence is to be part of this journey. And to, I think the other aspect for us, from mine and Lawrence's perspective, I believe, is like, at least we know there's other people out there who think like this. that's anything. That's the purpose of this show, this, what we talk about here, particularly this episode, is that if you're out there thinking you're lost, that, oh my god, I just need to get an org chart together, my business would be brilliant, I think hopefully this will open your eyes up to another way of looking at, okay, what is my energy like, what is it I really want from this, how is this serving me? And it's okay, because other people are trying this out as well. And you'll be in good company.
And also for me, one, I think, realization, we had a chat with you yesterday, I've found, is that these things can coexist at the same time. You know, you can have maybe different views on what you want and the business still benefit from that, like you said, Will. So I see Joel more on the people side and the, you know, getting a buzz from that, and Will from the growth and the expansion of the business and those things. Yeah, basically helping the business, not pulling them in different directions.
Mm-hmm. That's great. No, well, thank you very much. I think hopefully one of the things that this is going to communicate to people here is that, you know, we're always trying to find answers to how to make our businesses successful or work better or more effective. And I think the only way you can find the good answers is to ask the good questions. And what I think you guys have been doing is, like, you've been exploring what is the real question we're answering. You know, you said something, finding out what is the problem, what is the thing that we're trying to tackle, what's the thing that we need to be aware of in order to get the right solution, so that you get to this place where you actually clear about what needs to be done. So
I'll just say, it's not just asking the good questions, it's answering them honestly. Yeah. As well, because you can ask the good question, but if the person you're asking it to, or you yourself, don't actually answer it honestly and authentically to how you feel, then it's useless. So, you know, you have to, you know, the biggest piece of advice that I would give, and that I've learned from this, is that false harmony is an absolute killer. If you do not tell the truth, if you're not honest about what motivates you and what you want, in a non-judgment, it doesn't have to be judgmental or accusatory, but if you're not, then you're dead.
Nice. Any last words, Joel?
No, I just think, actually, reflecting on working with you guys has been amazing, and thank you. And, you know, immediately we felt connection with you guys, I think working with you guys, you know, knowing that you're in a similar situation, have been through similar things as well, gave us confidence to explore things with you that we might not have otherwise found from somebody else. So no, it's been amazing. I think, as Will said, you know, we've got lots to do still. And just reflecting on what Will just said then, even yesterday in our meeting with you guys, Will didn't want to say something because he thought it might make me feel a certain way. And he did say it. So even now, that just shows how there's still so much still to do, and you've got to keep working at it, got to keep reminding yourself. And yeah, no, it's been amazing, and I look forward to the next 10 years.
Cool. Well, thank you, everyone, for sticking with us. Any last words, Lawrence?
No, just I think they win the prize for the longest fireside, so yeah.
Eleanor, you were too good.
Yeah, well, we stayed on late enough for Eleanor to come and heckle us.
Well, thank you, everyone. Sorry if we weren't able to answer all of your questions directly, but I'm hoping that there's something there that you can take away and is of use. So have a great weekend. Thank you both. Thanks,
everyone.
And
cheers,
yeah, next week.
Thank you very take much, care. Guys. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Entrepreneur podcast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Also, if you'd like to learn more about being a happy entrepreneur and want to connect with more people like you, then go to our website, thehappystartupschool.com, and subscribe to our newsletter. Amongst many other things about business and life, we'll help you answer the following questions. How can I serve others by being myself? And how can I discover who I really am by serving others?